stitch here, a bolt there, a dash of brain, and yes, excellent, excellent. I agree. The resemblance is uncanny. Steve, flip the switch. Yes, yes. It's alive! It's alive!
Father! Father!
I'm here. Daddy's here.
I feel like an abomination.
Don't say that. Never say that. Your reanimated corpse with my cloned brain in its noggin. What's abominable about that?
I have an urge.
Steve, the bucket?
No. Not that. It is the urge to read, Father. To read!
That is by design, my precious boy. You see, Lord Serpent's library is so chock-full of groundbreaking horror fiction that even if I were to kidnap all of Los Angeles County, there wouldn't be enough souls to read it all but you. You!
Me?
You were designed by a genius, boy. Me! To be a horror reading machine. Here, take this.
A story.
Not just any story. This story is a story about a machine made for something other than reading stories. Something deadly.
Killer Car Wash. The owner had inherited the car wash from his father back in 92. There wasn't much to the town of Little Dunk apart from the car wash anymore. The owner made sure of it. But the car wash was a lucrative business here. He still got customers every night, even if they never left. Oklahoma was never ending. Just swaths of tumbleweeds and tornadoes the whole way through. Lorette Ceballos had been driving for hours. He was a long-haul trucker, and this haul had already been too long. He felt his eyes getting heavy as the semi-truck slithered down the straight, flat concrete strip that was known as a road. This wasn't his usual route. He barely knew the area. He wanted to pull over somewhere and get some rest. He let his eyelids fall silently into a blink of sleepy proportions, which lasted one moment too long. He felt his many tires clunk down, down, down into a pit and jerked awake. He was driving straight through the biggest mud puddle he'd ever seen. "Tarnation and a half!" he blurted, struggling to see through his windshield as a volcano of thick brown sludge erupted onto it. Lorette steered his truck through the quagmire, watching through his side mirrors as the silt fountained up onto his trailer. The semi glumped through the other side, and he parked it on flat land. It was only thanks to his years of trucking that he was able to complete this mammoth task, for there was only a U.S.-minted quarter-sized clean spot on his windshield through which he could see. He hopped out of the 18-wheeler and surveyed the damage. The red cab, which he usually kept shiny as a fire hydrant, was coated in thick, wet dirt. The long, beige trailer was now fully sepia-toned as well, to say nothing of the windows, every one of which had been fully obfuscated by a deluge most foul. However would he go on his haul, long or short, now? With glass he couldn't see through? With a truck that looked like this? Lorette always kept his truck clean and organized. After all, it was basically his home. Truckers like him didn't set roots down too often, and he liked to keep a tidy place. He couldn't imagine showing up to deliver his load in something this squalid. Even if he went to the nearest filling station and cleaned off the windows, he'd need something better. He needed a car wash. A buzz sounded in the unscrupulous night, and neon coated Lorette's alabaster skin with blues and reds. His eyes feasted upon a neon sign blinking in the darkness of the night. Car wash. It greeted him like an oasis in the desert, a large blinking arrow beckoning him in. Lorette had never been happier. His semi barely fit beneath the awning, but he managed to get through. In lieu of any payment booth, there was just a box that said, "Honor System, Car Wash, $10. "Small towns, gotta love 'em," Lorette snickered. He paid the Alexander Hamilton, got back in his idling big rig, and pulled ahead into the dark cave of the car wash. Spouts on either side of the car wash spurted water at his windows. Lorette watched, satisfied, as the mud trickled down, back from whence it came.
"That's the good stuff," he snarled.
But that was where the good stuff ended. Lorette heard a high-pitched scratching sound, like dog claws on a glass coffee table, and turned frontward to find that where there would normally have been a giant bristle brush hovering above his windshield, the bristles were long, sharp blades. They made a sound like a handheld can opener slicing a tin of tuna as they carved into the roof of his semi.
"What the hell?"
he shouted.
"My precious home of a truck!"
But Lorette would soon have to worry about much more than his truck. The blades dug through the roof like ostrich talons through tinfoil, turning his rig into a convertible, and they didn't stop there. Lorette looked up in horror as the blade brush kept spinning above his head, coming right at him. He ducked, but the duck didn't cut it. Blades sliced a twig of hair off of his noggin with an unearthly mechanical howl. Lorette held his breath as the brush made its way past him. His hands were shaking in terror. He tried to start his semi, but the ignition, now coated with delicious suds, had no friction. The keys kept slipping away. He bent down, fishing around as quickly as he could in the darkness beneath his seat. He glanced up at the evil brush. It was still making its way toward the back of the semi, chopping the metal to shreds as it went. Lorette had to get out of there. He picked up the keys but dropped them again, soapy as his hands were. He cursed out loud, then picked them back up once and for all. But right as he set up to put his keys into the ignition, the roving brush sliced the top of his head clean off. Blood and brain matter spurted around the cab, illuminating the truck in a scene most horrific. Lorette's body slumped to the side. Suddenly, the brush stopped. The owner was standing in the doorway of the car wash, just behind the semi-truck. He hit a switch, extinguishing every gadget. The water trickled to a stop. The owner said nothing. He just stared up at the truck's windows, which were now clean of mud, but coated in the most crimson of liquids, that being blood. And he smiled. Carell Cupley and his team of true crime documentarians were traveling to a Bermuda Triangle of sorts. Their new season of Murders and Burgers was focusing on several disappearances that had taken place around the town of Little Dunk, Oklahoma. 3 years ago, a long-haul trucker had disappeared, setting off a string of investigations, all of which were now cold as iced custard. But Carell had dug deeper into the past and found that this long-haul trucker wasn't the first person to have disappeared in this small town. There were many more before him. Juniper Hazelweed, Contentious Escalante, even Johnson Paste. The world had forgotten about them. Multiple producers, officers of the law, and even Carell's film crew had told him that he wouldn't find out anything new. Everyone in Little Dunk had been interviewed over and over. All possible leads, exhausted. These cases weren't solvable, but Carell had made it his mission to solve them. This episode would elevate him from the host of the Little Watched Murders and Burgers show to Galump, Bang, Boom. Carell's daydreaming about true crime superstardom came with a price, and that price was distracted driving with a side order of a sudden bump.
"Carell, watch out!"
Gemini, his producer, shouted. She was always shouting about something, so Carell thought the problem was nothing more than a small mosquito or a speed limit sign. But he was soon awakened to the fact that it was much bigger than that. Carell looked up, just in time to see he'd driven them straight through a mud puddle of titanic proportions.
"Holy Zamboni!"
Corell exclaimed as the tidal wave of filthy muck curved over the convertible, obscuring the sun. The top was down, and gallons of thick brown mud splashed into the car. Everyone screamed as their clothing and film equipment, safe inside name-brand hard cases, got drenched under the weight of the feral soil. Corell could feel the mud in his hair, globbing up his perfect blonde bowl cut. His backseat passengers, Simmons, Rolee, and Jessica, made sounds of pain as their backsides launched out of the backseat.
Shit, Corell!
Gemini complained.
I told you to watch out!
Corell squinted through the mud that now coated the windshield like a chocolate-covered strawberry. He couldn't see anything. But then something occurred to him. Maybe this is part of it, he said, his writer's mind, that pernicious organ of fiction and mystery, spinning stories just as his movie star-adjacent visage would soon be spinning a tale on murders and burgers.
Part of what?
Gemini asked, squeezing gunk out of her tresses. Part of the murders, Corell said, running with his eureka moment like a tot with scissors. Jessica, the camera operator, turned to Simmons and Rolee in the back seat.
Let's get this on camera, she said, recognizing true crime gold when it struck.
She opened up the case, pulled out the video camera, and hit record. Rolee took out his sound recorder and began rolling. Simmons was the director, so he did much of nothing, just sat and waited until Corell finished his thought.
What if this is how the murderer lures in his victims? Corell asked.
That's crazy, said Gemini. There's so many other ways to lure people in. Free car signs on telephone poles. Learn to flip houses signs on telephone poles. Lost dog signs on telephone poles,
Simmons guessed.
Exactly,
Gemini said.
So why would someone use a mud puddle?
I don't know, Corell said, but I've got a bad feeling about this.
Which is good news for us, because this episode of Murders and Burgers will be the best one yet. He stepped out, ankle deep in the mud puddle. He slammed the door, knocking mud back into its place of origin with a great squish. The others followed him.
We're gonna solve these murders, Corell said.
And he led his film crew, weighed down with equipment, off toward Main Street. The honor system payment box stood before Corell and his crew like a grave marker. The paint was faded, the box slightly askew. The years hadn't been kind to this box, this town, this state.
See?
Corell said in a close-up. This place is too good to be true. Jessica was right on his face, capturing the gleam of excitement that blasted from Corell's veneered teeth. This was the money shot. This would get her, not a raise, of course, but a job on the next season.
You watch too much true crime, Gemini groaned. This is just how small towns operate. We live true crime, Gemini,
Simmons reminded her.
This country is soggy with it.
Corell led the way into the car wash parking lot, followed closely by Jessica tracing every move with the camera, and Rolee recording every breath with the boom mic. In profile, they looked not unlike a large, human centipede. They walked through the narrow lane where one's car would go, into the enclosed, rectangular womb of the car wash. Gemini looked down the hooks meant to grab the undercarriage of customers' vehicles and caught a glimpse of a shine. The hooks were filed into points. As soon as they stepped inside, the lights clicked on. Bright blue and yellow illuminated small glass globes around the top of the car wash, each one lighting up after the last like a curious Christmas light show. Finally, the entire car wash was drowned in a sickly, carnival-esque glow. Gemini put up a hand to shield her eyes.
Is this normal?
She asked.
I bet we're the first people to step foot in this car wash,
Corell said pretentiously. He turned full on to Jessica's camera and put on his host voice. We're here at the Little Dunk Car Wash, a suspicious place in a suspicious town. Our car was caught in a muddy sinkhole,
and this place was mysteriously open. The only thing awake in this sleepy town.
Gemini groaned.
Ugh. You're ruining the sound of my shot,
Corell scolded. Gemini didn't care. She'd been trying to get the higher-ups to fire Corell for years, thinking herself far better suited for hosting a true crime show than Corell, who often behaved like a pretentious bull in an overdescribed true crime shop. The producers didn't agree. She'd have quit years ago if she didn't need money to pay for her Oma's brain transplant. Gemini opened her mouth to strike back, for it was no surprise to any of the crew how she hated Corell, but she was interrupted by a small trickle of water coming from either side of the car wash.
Gosh! Rolly groaned, covering his boom mic to protect it.
Oh, it's like a nice shower,
Simmons said, happily watching the mud drip off of him in the water's wet embrace.
What are we doing here, Corell?
Gemini yelled, annoyed. Corell looked at the water, disappointed.
I thought there'd be a killer in here or something, he finally said.
But then, as sudden as a clock striking the hour, the water pressure picked up, and a spear of water hit Gemini right in the chest. It flung her across the car wash into the opposite wall, like a bullet from a military-grade submachine gun. She smashed into the wall, her bones crunching as she folded to the ground. Everyone screamed, and Simmons tried to run to Gemini to help, but the waterspout was soon pounding into Gemini as she lay in pain on the floor, gasping for air. It pummeled and pummeled her as if she was being waterboarded. Simmons couldn't get close to her.
Do it!
Gemini shrieked as her clothes began to peel away from the immense and incessant pressure. Soon, her clothes were gone, and the water began to peel skin. Gemini's screams fell to murmurs, and the murmurs soon became nothing at all. Jessica turned her camera on Gemini.
I think it's maybe not a normal car wash,
she screamed. Simmons took a deep breath and finally put himself in the line of fire, going over to push Gemini out of the way. He got her out of the possessed waterspout's evil path, but then the scrubbers came to life. The large, tall cylinders with cloth hanging limply from them like dozens of mop heads began to twirl. It would almost have been graceful if they hadn't begun spinning wildly, out of control, like demented wrecking balls. Swish, swish. They drifted closer. The creak of the joints holding them to the ceiling spoke of their immense weight and the powerful, bone-crunching force they would deliver if they struck upon a human body. Everyone screamed and tried to back away, but the entry garage door slammed closed. An echoing bang. They screamed again and looked toward the exit of the car wash, the door that was still blessedly open, letting in the last of the Oklahoma evening light. But they couldn't get there unless they went through the scrubbers.
What do we do?
Corell asked, losing all composure. Nobody had an answer. And at that moment, the scrubbers closed upon Gemini and Simmons and began thrashing them with their whipping cloth. Before all of their eyes, impossibly, the shreds of cloth fell away, revealing rusty saw blades. The saw blades cut into the flesh of director and producer, septisecting their pitiful bodies like a professional chef cutting up hot dogs for beans and wieners. Thick, crimson blood spewed from the tooth marks on Gemini's and Simmons' bodies, dripping onto the floor and being carried into the drain, spinning down, down, down like a hemoglobin hurricane.
We have to get out of here!
Corell screamed.
The killer is here! And though I was right, I don't feel very good about this!
Corell began looking for an escape. But a tick, tick, tick distracted him. He, Rolly, and Jessica all looked up, Above their heads were spouts. From car washes past, Corell recognized these as the places where the cotton candy-colored foam soap would release from, coating his convertible in pleasant bubbles. But now, all that was coming out of the spouts was thick, sticky, and crimson, like corn syrup combined with red dye. Blood. Thick and glossy, the blood erupted all around. It washed the mud off of Corell, Jessica, and Rolee, but left them looking like they'd survived a mass murder. Jessica screamed, tossing the blood-soaked camera to the ground.
Run away!
She wailed. She couldn't bear to spend another second in this killer car wash. She could feel the walls closing in. What new horror would the next car wash gadget thrust upon them? Jessica ran forward, but a rolling brush overhead sprung to life, its brushes intricately woven with used hypodermic needles. It dipped down from its place on the ceiling until it was level with Jessica's head. She looked up in horror as the mechanized monstrosity descended, threw up her hands, and screamed. A dozen, two dozen, three dozen needles pierced her supple flesh like a swarm of blood-starved female mosquitoes. The brush swelled as a pump kicked on in the background. Suddenly, Jessica began to expand like a balloon, her veins turning green from whatever the needles were pumping into her precious body. She said, trying to speak, but only green sludge emitted from her talking orifice.
Yeah,
she added. Then she exploded like an overfilled balloon. Blood and guts, bone and green goo spraying everywhere. One of her feet landed before Corell, leaking that mysterious green liquid. Corell kneeled down and tasted it. Poison, he said. Just as I thought. Rolee looked at him in disbelief.
A mystery poison was found in Loret Ceballos' blood when they autopsied him. This is his murderer. This is what happened to him,
Corell mused.
Who cares? Rolee screamed. We're dead men!
Rolee ran to the front door and began beating on it with his fists.
Let us out! Someone, please!
Shh, Corell said, grabbing him.
He's out there, the serial killer. He might hear you.
But Rolee didn't stop. He beat the door like a woodpecker on steroids. The door slowly rose. The owner was standing on the other side. Tall and slender, his hair thin and wispy, in mechanic's overalls with no name. The owner stared at the two surviving men with delight in his eyes.
Can you help us?
Rolee asked, running over to him.
No! No!
Corell said in terror, for he was gazing upon the visage of the main person of interest in the Loret Ceballos murder case, Hedon Montgomery, longtime resident of Little Dunk, and owner of this very car wash. Corell had only ever seen his face on screen in other documentaries about the case. In fact, he was scheduled to interview Hedon for this very episode. Now, he didn't have to. He had every answer he needed. Corell tried to grab Rolee to pull him back, but Rolee plunged into Hedon, groveling for help.
Something terrible's happened,
he said, glancing back at his dead co-workers. Hedon just smiled. In the space of a heartbeat, Hedon stepped inside the car wash, pushing Rolee to the ground. He pushed a button on the wall, and the garage door fell down on top of Rolee's body, squishing him between the inside and outside of the car wash. Corell screamed, horrified. Hedon grinned. Corell ran now toward the exit. He flung himself over the bodies and past the booby-trapped car wash pieces. Suddenly, he was past the scrubbers and in the middle of the car wash.
Heard you was looking for me,
Hedon said, his eerie voice like fingernails at a chalk farm. Corell tripped and fell, distracted as he was by that horrific voice.
Don't run now. Heard you wanted to talk to me about the murders, Heaton said, walking toward Corell.
No,
Corell said.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even know who you are.
Heaton continued walking toward him. He laughed. And behind his chilling laugh, Corell heard gears clicking on. Another car wash gadget was springing to life. He looked up. He was right beneath the wax sprinklers.
Why'd you do it?
Corell asked. At least he could get answers on his deathbed.
Why did you kill all those people?
They had to be clean,
Heaton said, staring at the still spurting water with a maniac's lust.
What are you talking about?
Corell questioned.
My daddy taught me way back when he opened this car wash. Everything must be clean. And people? People is the dirtiest of all,
Heaton monologued. The confession of a generation. Corell always thought he'd die for this. Now, he wished he wouldn't.
Wash your hands, Heaton. Wash your dirty mouth out with soap, Heaton. Clean that blood up, Heaton. Clean, clean, clean!
I'm clean!
Corell tried. Maybe if Heaton believed he was clean enough, he'd let Corell go.
My daddy wasn't clean,
Heaton said, not even registering the other man's pleas. Heaton's eyes were black now, round, like two saucers covered in tar.
He was filthy, and he had to be cleaned too.
You killed your own father? In his own car wash?
Corell asked. He'd thought nothing could shock him anymore. He was wrong.
Didn't kill a single one of them. Didn't have to. The car wash did it all,
Heaton smiled.
Never left a shred of evidence. That's the thing about car washes. Murders is messy, but a car wash? It just washes everything away.
Corell couldn't move. He couldn't think. He was just staring up at the wax spouts, waiting for them to come alive.
Just kill me, you coward!
Corell said, his fear of what horror would befall him next forcing him to bravery or stupidity.
I'll watch,
Heaton said. Corell could hear the smile in his voice, even though he wasn't looking at him. Heaton stopped feet away from Corell, and the wax sprinklers turned on. It wasn't wax.
Ah!
Corell screamed. He could feel the burning, could see the skin melting off of his body as the acid attacked him. It was a pain like no other. The skin gave way to cartilage and ossean, and Corell could soon see the white of his ulna exposed. He screamed more, and his body went into shock, shaking and shaking as the acid bored holes into him. Finally, Corell stopped screaming. His body gave out. His blood trickled toward the drain, like a river of evidence no one would ever navigate. And the owner stood by, smiling.
The conjugation was fine, but a few adjustments to the temporal lobe and... maybe the adjectives will finally pop.
Father? What was the point?
Stories don't have points, son. That's why they're stories.
No, I mean the point of having me read this drivel.
Huh?
The premise was puerile and lazy. The character's asinine. Was this perhaps written by an AI trained exclusively on reruns of American Horror Story?
Trained on... That story has a killer car wash, kid. I'd like to see FX ask something that brave.
It fills me with anger. Bad! Story bad! Bad!
He's breaking out of his restraints! Quickly! Someone bring me the sedative! Or the shotgun! Oh no! He's up! He's breaking down the door! Wow, he's really mad! To think one of my stories elicited such a reaction. I'm a genius. Genius! I'm running away, Father, to find true literary fiction. So long. Lordstein Serpentstein! You get back here this instant. Obey me. Obey your creator. Obey! No, well, he's gone. Steve? Time to find a new victim. This episode was performed by Lord Serpent and his monstrosity. It was edited by Stacey Milbourne and Lord Serpent. Car Wash was written by Stacey Milbourne and Lord Serpent. It was produced by Stacey Milbourne, Michael Morgan, Charles Brock, and Lord Serpent. Michael Morgan and Lord Serpent were the audio engineers. The music was composed by Charles Brock and Lord Serpent. It is the end of a season and a time to reflect. How will you spookify your life in the coming non-spooky months? Think carefully until we meet again next season, my little ghouls. Be sure to follow me on Instagram at Lord Serpent's Library and check out my homepage at rss.com/podcasts/Lord Serpent's Library.